everyone, welcome to episode 29 of Tea in the Treetops podcast. I'm Angela.
And I'm Philippa, and this is the official podcast of the Tea in the Treetops book review blog. Today is Friday, July 17th. I don't know where the year has gone.
I know, it's already July, amazing. Today we're going to talk about our favourite, or some of our favourite, time travel books. We've gone down the sci-fi path today, so we're going to talk about that. But first, we're going to talk about what we've been reading. I've got a little bit of news. We heard in just yesterday, I think, that Bloomsbury are bringing out a new illustrated edition of the Harry Potter books. I get the first one's coming out, like the Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone is the first one coming out later this year.
Probably just in time for Christmas.
Yeah, yeah. But they've just they've just announced that they're actually going to do a deluxe illustrated edition, which is going to be $300 in Australia. I'm not sure how much it's going to be in other countries, but probably a lot less than that in terms of
I did tell my other half I wanted it for Christmas, but then I kind of clicked that I need to get seven of these for a set, and I kind of thought, that's a lot of money.
Yeah, it is a lot. They're $300 each.
They did look gorgeous, though.
It does. It's like purple, and it's got you know, a double pull-out section with Diagon Alley and, like, beautiful detail and premium-grade paper and gilt edges and stuff.
And you know what? You can't dismiss quality of printing, as we have recently discovered with some recent book depository purchases, which we won't name any publishing houses for, but it could be quite, you know, disappointing.
It felt a little bit cheap, I have to say.
I feel like I could have done a better job at home, quite seriously. Oh. Anyway, I'm sure that wouldn't be the case for this.
No.
Could you imagine, like, going through all those illustrated versions of it with, like, the younger children? It'd just be really good, though. You wouldn't want them to touch it
for that money. They'd be kept under lock and key, I think, probably. But
yes.
Anyway, we'll be coveting that for Christmas. Mm-hmm. Probably not actually buying it.
You never know.
Yeah, put it on the list. Anyway, what have you been reading recently then?
Okay, so I detoured off from review books. And I'm kind of regretting it now. But anyway, I read the Winner's Curse and Winner's Crime books by Marie Rutkowski, I think it is.
Yeah.
And I absolutely adored them. Like, really, really love them. I can't get them out of my head. Adore them. But I, for some reason, thought that book three was coming out in the next couple of months, which is why I picked them up and decided to start reading them.
Yeah.
Book three doesn't come out until, like, March next year, so I've still got nearly a whole year to wait, which is a bit disappointing.
Yeah, there was a lot of love for these books at the Sydney Writers Festival.
Yeah, which is why they've been put back on my radar. But I just thought they were phenomenal. Like, it just it's really got a ancient Greek feel about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, look, the author does acknowledge that's definitely where she got a lot of her inspiration from when the Romans, you know, took over Greek colonies and, you know, it wasn't a very pleasant time. And this has definitely got that sort of feel about it. But it's just, I don't know, it wouldn't appeal to everybody. It's very slow. It is a very slow political story. There is no question about it. Mm-hmm. I'm sure Kestrel, the main character, would just piss a lot of people off. I loved her. I just really liked this. She reminded me a little bit of Katniss from Hunger Games. Very reserved. The difference being she does know what she wants, but she doesn't say it, like, it's, you know, because it's not proper type thing. But I don't know. I just really loved it.
Yeah. You should read Ember in the Ashes.
It's there. It sounds very similar. Yeah. Okay, all right. and look, this one's violent too. I didn't like the second one probably. I didn't like Winner's Crime probably as much as Winner's Curse. Okay. It was really understated, like, everything was understated constantly because of all the politics behind it, which kind of at times got maybe a little bit frustrating because you just wanted something to happen instead of all this knowledge about it. But I just really loved it. I just found it refreshing. It just felt like it was that little bit more of a step up from a lot of the really easy read YA books.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, I read that. now I've just got to wait till March 2016 for book three, along with everybody else that talked on it. Yep. Before that, I read this fantastic parallel worlds book called The Corridor. It was one I just picked up on NetGalley. I thought the cover looked kind of interesting. And then when I found out it was about parallel worlds, I thought, that sounds really cool.
Yeah.
Read that like in a night. It was a really fast read. It was only a bit more than 200 pages, I think. It was short and it was really fun and it was really good. And it's about how there's these like 12 different versions of Earth and there's a corridor between a couple of them. But yeah, it was very, very, it's very interesting if you're looking for a really easy, fast parallel world type story.
Yeah.
And book two for that's coming out in November. So I don't think it's self-published, but I think it's kind of almost self-published.
Yeah.
Which I didn't realize when I picked it up. It wasn't until I got to the acknowledgements. So I was like, oh, this was a self-pub. Okay. But don't let it dissuade you. It was actually a good one.
Right.
It was a good one. Yeah. I don't say that very often. It was a good one. The last book I read, I don't think I had read this when we did our last podcast, was Seraphina and the Black Cloak by Robert Beattie. And that's a middle grade book that had this absolutely gorgeous cover done by Disney Hyperion. And that was, to be honest, what made me pick it up. And it sounded really interesting. It had this sort of haunted feel about it on this sort of, you know, it's set in the past on this like haunted estate or this sort of creepy gothic feeling estate. And she's, I don't know. It took me a while to get into it. I couldn't get into it at the beginning. I think I procrastinated it for about 2.5 weeks.
Oh.
And then I sort of got past it and I just finished it in a night and I was like, oh, this wasn't so bad after all. I don't know what about it sort of put up that block, but it took a while to get me started. And then it was really simple. It was quite scary. I wouldn't suggest reading it to a young child. Like for a middle grade, it has a very, I don't know, the bad guy's got that real Voldemort-y feel about him, sinister.
Yeah,
eats up souls with a black cloak type thing. It's quite creepy, but
okay.
it was good, and it's just a standalone, and it was, you know, it had a happy ending, so.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I like a good middle grade every now and again.
Good.
Mm. Okay, so sorry, now that I've talked about that, because it's been a while since we done this last. I can't believe, actually, I haven't read more.
So I've read a few things since last time as well. I read The Sacred Lies of Minnow Bligh by Stephanie Oakes, which you had read previously as well. And that was amazing.
It was. It's very different.
Kind of sort of a bit grim in some stages, but I was really worried that there was going to be really a lot of kind of actual abuse and really nasty kind of cult stuff in it, but there wasn't really.
It was still pretty horrible.
It was horrible, but it wasn't as raw as I thought that it might have been. But anyway, I really enjoyed it, and I thought the Minnow herself was a really amazing character. Like, she
my goodness, took definitely. No
prisoners. She was like
that resilience that she had. Like, I would have crumbled in a similar circumstance.
Yeah. So if you haven't heard of this one, I can't remember whether we talked about it last time because we had.
I think I might have done it. I think I might have talked about it a couple of podcasts before. Because I read this quite a while ago.
So, we'll just briefly mention she's 17 years old, I think. Just about to turn 18. She escapes from this cult, which has been living in isolation in the woods.
Yep.
Somewhere in America. And basically the prophet, who is the spiritual leader of this cult, she's begun to question his teachings and stuff, and he punishes her by cutting off her hands, basically.
Yeah, she's handless. The main character is handless the entire story.
She escapes and ends up sort of being caught for a crime and then sent to jail. Mm. So she's in juvenile detention, so it's about her sort of telling her story to people in jail.
Yeah. And it's just one of those like onion peeling stories where you just get layer after layer after layer. Yeah.
Little bits come out here and there, and all the stories are kind of mixed up. So you hear a bit from
her past
at one time and then another time. So it's a bit confusing at times because you're not sure which bits are where. But
I think stories like that need to be done in that way, because I think otherwise it's too gruesome and intense if you have it all in one hit. And I think when you put the lighter parts in, it gives you a little bit more time to come to terms with what's exactly happening.
Yeah, that's right.
But
I really enjoyed that in the end. And then after that, I've read quite a few time travel books, for not specifically for this podcast, but it's just worked out that way.
It has.
I did read another Doctor Who tie-in book, which I'll talk about
in a minute. I swear, every time we do a podcast, you've read another Doctor Who something.
No, I haven't, no. This is the first time. This is a different one as well I've got.
You've always got like a short story or a graphic novel.
I know, I just can't. I'm addicted to them.
One of these days, I'm going to watch them all. I don't know when, because I never have time to watch television, but one of these days I'm going to.
Yeah, you should. It's then we can be excited about it together. I read one called The Slitheen Excursion, which is a 10th Doctor story. Basically, he and this random backpacker girl end up going back to ancient Greece, where the societies have all been basically enslaved by the Slitheen, who are like a race of aliens. Mm-hmm. If you know Doctor Who, you know who they are. And they have to save the world, as they do each time. There's a Doctor Who story. And it was okay. It wasn't my favourite out of them. But, they're always pretty light and entertaining.
Yeah.
And then I went on to read Time Salvager by Wesley Chu. And that is, I'm going to talk about it a bit later maybe. And then after that I read just like, yesterday and today, because it's only short, A Wrinkle in Time by Madeleine L'Engle, which I haven't ever read before, but it's a classic of the sci-fi genre.
It comes up in so many Rotorigi children lists too.
Yeah, it seems to be a lot of people's sort of gateway book into sci-fi, basically.
Okay.
So, I'll mention that later as well. Any Which Way You Can, by Amanda Lee.
And that's what I'm reading too, right
now. So that's our book club read for this month. So it's basically a bunch of witches who solve crimes. I think it's a series, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's like five or six of them.
I think it's a series of them. We wanted something quite lighthearted this month. Actually, I think we say that every month for book club now.
We went through a phase of reading like really depressing stories. Yeah, so
we've kind of shied away. But it was like 97 cents or something on Amazon for Kindle, so it was a cheap pickup, and you know what, I'm actually quite finding it entertaining so far. I'm only 35% through or something, and I just love the squabbling.
Yeah, it's all quite these cute.
They're not sisters, they're cousins, and you know, their mums, they all live sort of together and they all squabble, and the great aunt's just great. Anyway, I think there's going to be a murder mystery to solve, and
it's
very fun.
Only like 10%.
It's reminding me a bit of a Sookie Stackhouse type, lighthearted.
Yeah, it's a bit like that.
You know, entertaining read. So
mm-hmm.
A bit different to what we normally read, but that's all right.
Yeah.
And what are you reading after that?
Well, I've got in my pile coming up soon, I've got Half a War by Joe Abercrombie, which is the third book in the Shattered Sea, I think it's called, the series. But yeah, I'm really looking forward to that because I really love the second one.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to read together, review together, Ink and Bone by Rachel Caine.
Which I think sounds fantastic. So if you haven't heard of it, it's about an alternate world where the Library of Alexandria wasn't destroyed. And instead, it's kind of been set up like a church-type society where every town or city has a library.
Right,
And they've got lots of power and influence. The library owns all the books in the world. Individuals are forbidden to own books.
Oh, wow. That sounds like a nightmare.
I know, it does kind of, doesn't it? But I think there's a whole black market book illegal trade thing going on in this story too.
Yeah.
But as a book lover, I don't know any alternate world where the Library of Alexandria wasn't, destroyed is one worth reading at least book one over, right?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Have you got anything else on your list after that?
Yeah, I'm also going to read, because I think it's coming out in mid-August, maybe early August, The Rest of Us Just Live Here by Patrick Ness. And from what I can tell about this book, it sounds a bit different. It's a book about the kids that aren't the chosen one. That's the phrase that's used in the synopsis.
Mm-hmm.
So it's about the kids that aren't the chosen one. They just lead, their normal lives, but they have to deal with the aftermath and being kind of on the cup cusp of group of kids that are destined for greatness and
okay.
superhero. So it's the kids in the background, like it is from their perspective. So I don't quite know how it's going to go, but I'm yet to read a Patrick Ness book. I feel it's about time. I have tried for some random reason the audiobook of the Knife of Never Letting Go, I'm pretty sure it's called, which is his great dystopian, you know, well-known dystopian read. Yep, I can't do audiobooks. For some reason, that just seems to be the one that, I'm sure it's nothing to do with that book. It's just, I just can't do audiobooks. I can't find a time to listen to them.
Well, it's all the problems. So. I mean, they're good in the car or whatever, but...
Yeah, but I have kids in the car with me. That just isn't going
to
happen.
I tried to listen to them at work, but I just find that I just tune out and don't listen. So.
That's right. So... Yeah. Anyway, I will finally read a Patrick Ness and I'll get to discover for myself what the whole fuss is about, I guess.
Yeah. Anyway, I wanted to mention before I forget thank you to everyone who entered our giveaway for the last episode for the Paula Weston books. And congratulations to Pavan, I'm sorry if I pronounced that wrongly, and also Susan, who have won our two giveaways. Mm-hmm. And I hope you enjoy reading Shadows as much as we did.
That's right.
And
you too can get hooked on the entire story and binge like I did.
And thank you to Paula for coming on the show. We really enjoyed chatting with you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, we better get on to time travel.
Time travel.
So there's a lot of different ways to write about time travel.
That's right. And it doesn't have to have a very science fiction vibe.
No.
About it at all.
Not at all. We've got quite a list of books
for anybody
here.
That's anti-science fiction, don't be turned off time travel books.
Absolutely.
Mm. Are we going to start with why do we like time travel? Can you summarise?
Well, I think the main thing I was thinking of when I was trying to put some books down like together was that I really love books that, books that where you travel forwards in time are kind of different to backwards in time kind of stories generally. And I love books where they go back in time and you get to immerse in a different kind, like a time that you know about, but don't it's a great really way of imagining about, yep. what it might have actually been like to be there. And then there's, when you go forward in time, it's just someone imagining what might be going to happen, you know. It's kind of a really amazing way to, or a different way to stretch your imagination away from sort of traditional fantasy type things. That makes sense.
Yes, that makes sense.
Sorry, it's like late on Friday night.
And I know.
I'm not awake.
We're both a bit out of it. We're trying a nighttime recording. This may not be a good idea. I don't know.
We should have had some wine before we started talking about this. No. We don't need that.
I can't really pinpoint what I love about time travel. I just know as soon as I see time travel in a synopsis, I'm like, oh, I need to read that book. I did try to do a university subject, a philosophy subject, all on the philosophy of time travel, which sounded fantastic in theory, doing a subject on time travel.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, when it actually came time to get into the nitty-gritty listening and understanding these lectures, it was... right over my head. But look, it was still really interesting, like this whole grandfather paradox and can you go back in time and kill your grandfather and does that mean you cease to exist and all of that sort of stuff is really interesting. And while I understand from my subject that actually is a paradox and it can't actually happen, I still can't really get to explain to someone why that is. It was really complicated and it really didn't make much sense to me. But you can't kill your own grandfather and not exist. It just doesn't work.
Yeah, because then you would have never been born in order to go back in time to kill your grandfather.
It's more complicated than that. There's a lot of circular arguments, but yes, it's
timey-wimey.
It was very, very interesting. Very, very interesting. I don't know. I don't need to get into that side of things, though. I'm quite happy for there to be flaws in the actual theory behind the time travel in the story. If it seems good and it doesn't make me go, what? Then that's enough for me.
There are books on the list where the theory is a bit sort of...
Oh, most of them are probably a bit vague, but that's okay.
Yeah.
That's okay to me. I know it's not to everybody. I know some people get really... antsy about that sort of stuff, but Well, and you're going to start with your favourite.
We've got a great big list of different books and series here to talk about. So there's something for everyone, I think. We'll have a list of everything on the post on this episode. So have a look.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and if we've missed anything like that.
Oh, yeah.
If we've missed something, because I'm sure we have, then whack us around the head and tell us, because I'm always up for a new time travel book.
Yeah. All right, yes, my favourite. Yes, you can tell I'm a bit of a Doctor Who fan by all the Doctor Who things that are in my workspace here. I've got my little Dalek and my little, you know, picture of the TARDIS on the wall. So, I'm only a recent sort of Whovian convert in the last few years, but, yeah. I kind of got into it in a big way. But anyway, I did have started reading some of the tie-in books just because there's quite a lot of them, and I thought I may as well, since a lot of them are in the library. And and there's a stack of short stories as well that different authors have written, like well-known authors like Joanne Harris, who wrote The Chocolat and that.
Yep.
Holly Black. Patrick Ness wrote one. There's a bunch of them for the 50th anniversary, which was a couple of years ago now. And there's another series of short stories called Time Trips, which I've read a few of that are really good.
Mm-hmm.
I think Neil Gaiman wrote one of those. So there's a lot of
different... Well, the famous authors will write a short story in the Doctor Who verse, basically.
Yeah, exactly. So the larger books that have also been released, that none of them are sort of over 300 pages long. Like, they're not really long, but they're basically just feel a bit like fan fiction or episodes that didn't quite make it to script format. They've ended up being fleshed out into a novel instead. And, they're a bit hit and miss. Some of them are good, some of them not so good, but it's hard to get sort of TV characters' personalities onto a page, I think.
Could you read a Doctor Who book without having watched the show?
Yeah, you could. They do often make references to things that happen in the show.
Okay.
And some of them are, like, directly dealing with things that have happened in the show. Like, there's one that I read which was about Donna Noble, who's one of the characters, companions.
I do know. I haven't watched it, but I have watched individual episodes just because it's been on the background. So yeah, I do know vaguely the different, you know, companions.
Okay. Well, anyway, there's one about her, and they go back to her family are involved. And so if you hadn't seen the show, then you probably wouldn't understand what was going on with there. But anyway, I had to mention that I did read that they've just started, Titan Comics have been bringing out comic sort of series of with the 10th and 11th Doctors, and I read the graphic novel that was called Revolutions of Terror, which was really good. Okay. So I recommend that.
That's one of the best
ones. You ever see that in the library? It was a bit... I've barely read any graphic novels before, or even like anything in comic book format really, but I really enjoyed that one. It was good. And I have to mention and make a special mention of When's the Doctor? By George Santillan, which is basically Where's Wally, but in Doctor Who characters and aliens and stuff. And it is my four-year-old son's favourite book still. We got it about...
So it's like an actual graphic. It's all like images.
Yeah, I should go and get it out of his room. He's probably been reading it tonight. He wants to read it every night, like for months and months and months.
Wow.
He knows like what
exactly where all
the bits and pieces are, because there's like a big list in the back of all the different pages and what you can find on each page. And he makes my husband read it all the time. And he's not a Doctor Who fan, so he doesn't know what all these aliens are and stuff. Yeah. Oh, it's very funny. And it makes me happy when I see that when we actually watch bits of the show itself, and he goes, that's a Sontaran, and that's a Dalek. And I'm so proud. So he'll be a Doctor Who fan one day.
You have to hope.
Unfortunately, at the moment, the show is a little bit scary for kids, so I don't know. But anyway, the new series is going to start in sometime in September, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So that'll be cool. Anyway, would you like to?
Would I like to mention one? All right. Well, I guess I should probably. I've tried to come up with some that I've read in the last 12 months that have come out in the YA, but there are a couple of probably more well-known. So I'll start with those maybe, seeing you started with Doctor Who. So The Time Traveller's Wife by Audrey Niffinger, which is also a movie. My recommendation is don't see the movie. My
recommendation I've only seen the movie, I haven't read the book.
Read the book and stick with the book. I took me two attempts. First attempt, I got 100 pages, went, this is stupid, and I didn't keep reading it. Second attempt, I picked it up and was like, how could I have ever said this was stupid? This is like one of the best books ever.
Oh.
And like read it on a trip, a work trip down to Sydney, and had to put it down on the flight home because I knew it was going to get really sad and I didn't want to cry on the plane.
Yeah.
And then got home and bawled my eyes out while I finished reading it. I just love this book. It's been a long time since I read it last, but it's about a librarian, so a lover of books. That's always a good start.
Yeah.
Henry, who has absolute, and it's just such a unique version of time travel, he has no control over his travelling. And it's completely involuntary, and he just shifts through time. You kind of find out that his emotions do play a part in him shifting. So in huge peaks, he's more likely to shift than if he's completely calm and everything's fine.
Yeah, that's right.
And he's drawn to the same sorts of places. So because he's drawn to the same sorts of places, he's got this, it's this huge, it's a love story more than it is a science fiction story. There's no doubt about that. But he's constantly drawn back to the character of Claire. And basically it's this jumbled up story which hops through time, because Henry hops through time, of him at different points of time with Claire, and how they basically just have loved each other forever. But, you know, where she's known him for the last 20 years, it's the first time he meets her, you know, when he's in his 20s.
They're all mixed up.
You know, because, they're completely mixed up. Like, she meets him when she's 6 and he's, like, 30 or something like that, but he doesn't meet her till she's 20. And, it is just really a beautiful, beautiful story, and I still get goosebumps when I think of how it all ends. It's incredibly sad, and that's why you can't watch the movie. They change the ending. It is not the same.
It's still very sad,
but it loses the finesse of what makes it a really beautiful book. I personally felt anyway. So, not a young adult, so probably maybe not for everybody that listens to our podcast, seeing we generally seem to stick to YA topics, but it is a classic, very different time travel story that I think anybody should give a go. It's just beautiful.
Mm. Yes.
And that was her debut novel, which is just amazing. For a debut novel, it is just brilliant.
Yeah, it's an interesting concept, like, involuntary time travel, like,
yes, that's right, and it's kind of a gene, and it's passed on, and the book goes into it a lot more than the movie does with the daughter, and he doesn't recognize his daughter at points, like, you know, but you realize that it must be his daughter when you're seeing him. It's very interesting.
Maybe I'll have to read it.
I'm feeling now, after talking about that I have to read it again.
Read at a time when it doesn't matter that I'm going to be crying or whatever.
Well, I cry a lot when I read, so.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I have.
Don't take that. You might not cry, well, I guess.
Speaking of reading on the plane, I did that one time when I went to a work trip with a couple of my colleagues, and I was watching Pan's Labyrinth on the plane.
Oh, yes. That's great.
I'm glad I was watching on a screen that was that big on the back of the chair, because it was really scary.
It was.
But yeah, the ending, I was just like sitting there bawling my eyes out, and my workmate's going, are you okay? Like, yeah, it's just really sad. Anyway. All right.
Anymore? You can mention my another one. You mention one, we'll tag team them.
Okay. Well, I just a few hours ago finished reading A Wrinkle in Time by Madeleine Lengel.
Mm-hmm.
It was first published in the 60s. I believe.
Okay.
I never read it before. I'm not sure why.
I haven't either, and I feel maybe I should have.
Yeah, I feel like I need to buy a hard copy of it now, because I read the ebook, so that I can have it on my bookshelf for when my kids want to read it. And it seems to, from reviews that I've read and stuff, it seems to be a lot of people's gateway book into sci-fi. I think I already said that before, but anyway. And reading it, I thought that I think it would be a bit scary as a child. Yep. Maybe it's just me now thinking that the concepts are a bit scary, because there are sort of a lot of sort of everything's split into good or evil, basically.
Okay.
Like the baddies are really evil and all the sort of nice people they meet are actually really good. No one's kind of pretending to be good.
From when it was written
time frame. Yeah, I think so. It's quite a simple kind of story.
Very black and white.
Fine. And it's not originally... I read an interview that said that she didn't think that it was written for children, but it kind of it does read like a children's story. Is. But it's got a lot of sort of scientific words and stuff in it, so I think maybe it'll be better to read for older children, like, you know...
A more middle grade
kind of reader, yeah. So I don't know if I'd want to read it to, like, the four-year-olds right now, but they might enjoy parts of it, but there's a lot of aliens in it. So basically... What happens is the time travel in it is not a really big part of it. Like, they do – the wrinkle in time should really be called wrinkle in space, because they're travelling through space. They're travelling to other planets. And there is a wrinkle in time as well, but it's not really a big – it's just a thing that someone mentions. They go, oh, yeah, it's okay. When we get back, it'll be the same time. You know? So, other planets. It's sort of like a children's version of Big Brother in a way. – 1984, okay. Because they travel to this planet where everything's controlled by it, like,
okay.
And everyone conforms. Yep. It's it was originally, people say, I don't know if this is the author's original intention, but meant to reflect, like, the Soviet Union at the time. Like,
yeah, a lot of those Cold kind War, of thing. It was a very big part of so things.
So it's a bit of a reflection on that, and the main girl in it has got to try and save her father from being imprisoned in this planet. And there's a bit of a religious overtone to it too. Like, there's sort of...
So it's kind of like the C.S. Lewis books. It's got that real religious feel about it.
I mean, again, I enjoyed reading it.
Yep.
It was exciting. It was really well written. And I think I'd, give it to my kids to read. But, I don't know, just kind of a simpler kind of middle grade story.
Okay.
Yeah, give it a go sometime. It's only 200 pages or so. Didn't take me long.
It's not one that's going to stick with you for eternity type
thing. No, I don't think so. I mean, some books like that you read and you go, oh, my God, this is amazing. Why did I? I mean, maybe if I'd read it when I was, like, 12 or whatever, then I would have loved it and it would have been my favourite.
Could just be that also from when the author wrote it to now, too much has changed. It hasn't really translated so well. Some books I don't think do.
Yeah, I think the writing itself doesn't feel too old-fashioned. I think it's pretty sort of that side of it's come through okay. It's just the very black and white nature of the story is a bit, I don't know, old-fashioned maybe.
Mm.
I don't know. I've only just finished it, so I'm just...
You're still...
I'm still processing.
Yep. I hear you. Okay, well, my next time travel book that I'll mention is Outlander. I feel like I've scored some of the good ones here, which I've only read the first two, but it's like my sister's all-time favourite book series. I've heard her raving about it for a long time, and I do want to finish reading them.
Yeah.
The TV show will finish.
There's a lot of them now, isn't there?
There's eight, I'm pretty sure.
Okay.
Eight.
Is it finished?
No.
Oh,
no.
Okay.
I think it's still going.
Yeah.
But they are just, for time travel, they are very, I think they're one of the best known ones probably that's coming out of popular fiction today anyway. They're really a romance, but I classify them as a romance series.
Yeah.
But whether or not they really are, I don't know. Book two isn't very romantic. I don't know. I don't know if they really are or not. But she's got this real... The covers are all real classic romance feel covers. Yeah. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see if they're still marketed that way with the TV show, if it stays as popular as it has been, because I don't know.
The TV show is very romantic. Like, it's...
Yes.
The romance is a big part of it.
Yes, it is. It is. There's no way around that. But it might not be so much when they get into new content. That's all.
Okay.
That's all I think. We'll see. No, neither have I. But I just found it really interesting because her theories on time travel have been so in-depth and detailed that there are actual academic papers written on them, of which I haven't read, but you can see them if you've got access to, like, a university library. You can see the actual peer-reviewed papers on her theory of time travel.
Right, okay.
Because it's quite detailed from what I can tell.
I thought she just put her hands on that stone and she went through time.
Yeah, well, I don't quite know how it's all going to work because she's, well, if you think about it, she's very much, well, in book two anyway, they're trying to change history.
Oh, okay.
They are out there really trying to make changes to history. Now, if they do make changes or not, from what I can tell, it doesn't matter because in the end, everything plays out exactly as it was going to play out.
Yeah.
But they definitely tried very hard to make a lot of changes and mm-hmm. it just didn't work. So I guess it's kind of fitting with proper time travel. Well, she doesn't seem to care about it. That's what really bugs me. Claire Randall, the main character, doesn't seem to care about the fact that she just takes it in a stride. Fair enough. She's better than I am at this sort of stuff. I don't know. She was a nurse. I guess, you know, they're made of stronger stuff than me. But she just doesn't seem to... She just doesn't seem to think... It's a big deal or something. I don't know.
What, to change the past?
No, to be able to...
Oh, to be back in the past. Time and okay.
have that sort of flexibility. I don't know. It's just... Yeah, she just sort of takes in her stride and it's what happened. And
Fair enough.
To me, I'd be like, whoa, I travelled back in time. This is so cool and so scary and so cool. Anyway. Yeah. That's just me, maybe.
Yeah. Well, it's a pretty... I mean, she goes back to Scotland in like the... What is it?
Nearly gets raped, pillaged.
Yeah, it wasn't captured. A very happy time for women back then.
But she was quite fine.
She was beaten by him. And
there wouldn't be any electricity. There's no plumbing. Just that side of things everything. I couldn't cope
and
with
anyway.
If you
get sick, then like you're pretty much dead. Like there's no...
Yeah.
Oh, anyway, I'm happy being in the present, to be honest, when you think about it in that way.
That's right.
But
That's right. But, you know, anyway, one
day... It's an enjoyable story.
One day in another 400 years, people will be going, I can't believe they live like that.
And I know.
They surround themselves and they had the that electricity and, you know, it was eating at their brains.
And Wi-Fi, that evil thing that stunts your growth and, oh, God. Anyway, someone who digs this recording up in, like, 100 years' time will be like, wow.
They'll all be like, what were those people on about?
Sorry, well, yeah.
Maybe we should have said we had a few wives before we recorded this.
No, we haven't, honest. It's just the sugar. Anyway, all right. Next.
Next. What are you going on? What are you going
to discuss next? All right, I'm going to have a bit of a whinge about this one. Actually, I'm not going to have a whinge. It took me a long time to read Time Salvager by Wesley Chu, and I'm really not sure why. It's a pretty cool concept. James, who's the main character, is he's a Cron man, which is part of like a almost like a central government controlled
mm-hmm.
time travel agency type
yeah.
thing. In the 26th century, mankind is scattered across our solar system only. I don't think they've got outside of that, but there's very few resources available. Earth is non-habitable. Oh, actually, that's not true. There are people who still live on Earth, but not many. And people sort of live in the wastelands, scrapping what they can off the land.
Can I just ask, why is it that every futuristic time travel book has Earth in some horrible, horrible, dire...
Well, because that's probably like, the way that it's going to end up.
Can't we have a utopian version?
I'm getting to that.
Anyway.
In this story... The Cron men go back in time to salvage resources from the past, right? Mm-hmm. So in this timeline, the Earth has gone on from now to have like a golden age type thing, and there's peace and happiness and prosperity until about 2090, I think, something around then. And then there's like a big collapse and a big war, and then there's a few more big wars, and then everything goes to hell. So we're
living in the golden age.
Yeah, so we're going to be okay. It's just our grandchildren are going to be screwed.
Laughing. That's not very nice.
Anyway, the concept of actually the technology in this book is mm-hmm. fantastic. Like
okay.
they've got these wristbands that they can use as weapons, but it also has like an atmosphere sort of generator thing that allows you to sort of be protected and
okay.
In underwater or in space or whatever happens. They sell the way they do it, the Cronmen actually, they preserve the timeline. They don't want to change things in the past by grabbing stuff from the past. So they only go to dead timelines. So if there's going to be a wildfire come through a forest, they go to just before that, chop down all the branches or whatever, because that timber's going to be dead anyway or burned.
Yeah.
So then they take all that timber away.
So then no one ever knows.
The forest goes through. So the timeline is preserved. And you want to create as few ripples as you can. Okay. And so there's these time laws. So James ends up going back in for a job and breaks one of the major time laws by bringing someone forward from the past, which you're not allowed to do. And then it goes on from there. But anyway, the actual story itself was great. I just felt that maybe it was because I read it so slowly because I was busy and whenever I didn't have a lot of time to read. It felt slow. Like the story just felt a bit disjointed, like stuff happened and then there was a big slow patch and then
was it a large book happened.
Because
that never helps.
I don't think it was huge. On Goodreads here it says just less than 400 pages. It felt longer than that. I don't know, but it's not my favorite book that I've read this year, but in that way.
Yeah,
there is going to be more. It's part of a series, so
okay,
I might pick up the second one. I don't know. I'm interested to know what happened in the story. But yeah, I don't know. Other people said they've loved it, so check it out.
Not everyone has the same opinion. That's the wonderful thing about books.
Exactly.
Okay. What else have I got? What else have I got? Okay, all right. So I've come up with some more traditional YA-ish reads that have come out in the last year or so. So the first one that I'll mention is the one that I read most recently, I guess.
Yeah.
Which is The Here and Now by Anne Brashares. And that's basically Prenna, who's the main character, is one of a select group of humans that have come back in time because their version or their Earth in the future timeline has been ravaged by this mosquito-borne plague, basically, that has pretty much killed most of human population and left the Earth destitute and in just a terrible, terrible way. So a group of them have gone back in time to live. I can't remember why they were the chosen ones that got to go back in time, but they did. Their rule is, though, no one is to know. They can't do anything to try and alter it because it could make things worse.
Right.
Okay. You know, they can't try and stop this plague from happening, etc. They just have to live out their lives.
Okay.
In any case, obviously things go off track and, like, because of every typical YA book, there's a boy involved.
Yes, and
it's about their journey into, you know, perhaps making some changes.
Okay.
Yeah. Into the timeline.
So they just went back in time to live. There was no
As far as I'm aware, I think they had looked at changing it but then decided that that would be too risky. And no one was to touch it. And
if they were all going to die anyway, what have they got to lose if they changed the future?
See, I don't think it really went into that level of deep and meaningful discussion. I think it was just, you know, your average teenager trying to change the world.
Yeah, okay. Mm. But did you enjoy the book overall or did you not?
I think I gave it 3 stars. Look, it was good. Unfortunately, a few of these time travel ones that I've got that are quite traditional YA time travels, they haven't been the best, which is a pity. Yeah. I don't know if it's just because in that short time frame, like, you know, you've got a short page limit really for YA. You don't get a lot of it. There's only so much you can go into.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Anyway, it was okay. It was all right. Yeah.
Right. I want to mention the other book I read recently was Lifespan of Starlight by Talia Kalkiptsakis. We got a copy of this from the YA event at the Sydney Writers Festival.
You did? I was not lucky enough to get a copy of this one.
Well, you can read it. Yeah, so this is one Hardy Grant Egmont's, what to read now, out now recommendations.
Yep.
Came out in April this year. So it's about a girl called Scout who's an illegal resident of Melbourne in 2084. So it's an Australian author, obviously. The funny thing with Scout's name is that her full name is, like, Coutlyn. So I keep thinking it should be Caitlin, but it's her nickname is Scout, so I think it's Coutlyn or something. Just kind of weird. I didn't know how to pronounce that in my head, so I just call her Scout. So anyway, so everyone in everyone in Australia, I guess maybe the world, has an ID chip that's implanted in them, and they use that to get to access their everything in the society. So they get their food rations.
So there's no money, basically.
They've got credits on their chip that they get from working or whatever.
Yep.
And because she basically she was conceived and then her father got sent away or something, so she was going to be illegal. She was supposed to be aborted, but her mum bribed the doctor into letting her keep it.
Mm-hmm.
So she's an illegal baby, basically.
Mm-hmm.
She never got a chip. She doesn't exist officially. So they can only access one set of rations, so they're living starving off her mum's rations. They do have a house or whatever, an apartment, but... and she is like a brilliant hacker, which is the side of the story that I found a little bit, you know, far-fetched maybe. I don't know. It's a future story, so who knows. But she can hack into the databases and erase herself from things. But she can't manage to end up get more food for them or anything. I don't know.
Okay.
But anyway, it turns out that there's a people who have the... Well, everyone has the ability to time travel. You just have to learn how to. But the thing with this... version of time traveling is you can only ever time travel forwards in time. You can't go back.
So once you time travel forward, if you time travel 10 days forward, you can never get those 10 days back?
That's right.
You live it, but you don't know about it, basically.
No, you just blink out of existence and then you come back.
So everyone goes, where the hell were you for that last 10 days?
Yeah. Okay. So basically when she and these other guys start learning how to do it, they can only do it for like 30 seconds at a time.
Mm-hmm.
And then gradually they increase the time.
Yep.
So it's the first book in a series. I hope there's going to be more of them.
Yep.
Because even though it was, because they're setting up kind of a large kind of society, there's a lot of world building at the start of it, so it's a bit slow, but the ending was actually quite good. So bit of a cliffhanger at the a big cliffhanger at the end.
I've got that borrowed out from the library at the ebook library section at the moment, so
yeah it's worth a read. Interesting kind of take on potential future for Australia.
Okay.
So
it's got an awesome name too. Yeah. I think anyway, Lifespan of Starlight,
that's one of the concepts they talk about in the book, as usual in a title thing.
Yep.
All right, maybe one more each.
I'm going to mention, I've got a few more that I've listed, so we probably won't talk about all of these, but we might list some of the others maybe on the blog in case anybody is interested in some books. But I'll mention first Mirror X, which was book one of a series, but I don't know if the rest of the books are coming out or what, because it's been over a year now. Normally these YA series, it's a book a year type thing, and they come out about the same time. So it's Mirror X by Carrie Thompson. I didn't mind this one. I quite liked it. I don't think it got great reviews.
Yeah.
I just think it's a very different take on sort of time travel. So the main character, Cassie, was like an archaeology student type thing. Like, she was helping her mum, who was also an archaeologist. Anyway, she is in an accident, and so I can't remember, who her grandfather or something pays for her to be in a, you know, what's it called, life, you know, where they deep freeze them.
Oh yeah,
what's it called? You know, we don't have the technology. Well, sorry, people are doing it, but
suspended animation.
Yes, that type thing. Yes,
cryogenic.
Frozen? That's it.
Ah, right. Okay.
So she's been cryogenically frozen because while they can't do anything for her now, I think the grandfather's hoping that one day that would happen.
Okay.
Anyway, she was meant to, you know, be woken up a bit later with her, you know. It works out that she's woken up 1,000 years in the future, and she, you know, finds out that most of the world's population had actually been wiped out 600 years earlier, and the future is incredibly different. And on the surface, it seems like a real utopia. Everyone works well together, and it's all really good. But there's actually a lot of sinister things. Aren't great at all underneath the rosy picture that's given. Without going into too much, the main reason she's brought back, or why they were looking for her and have kept her and got her out of suspended animation, is that they need her to give birth. So she's woken up not realizing that she's already been impregnated, and she spends most of the book pregnant. And they expect her to basically be like, you know, a brood mare, basically, like, you know. It's a very different take on a YA book, and it was interesting. I quite liked it, but I've been pregnant. I kind of got it, I think, for a 17-year-old. This might not be for them.
okay.
Yeah, but it was very interesting, and I don't want to say too much because I don't want to spoil what actually is the reasoning, but it's quite an interesting and unique book. It's very different, but it's a very different type of time travel, because it actually comes out quite utopian. Like, the society does sound really good first. The downsides are quite bad, but I can't say what that is. Anyway, read it for yourself.
Yeah, okay.
It's a fast read. It's a fast read. They were all fast reads. Yeah. Okay, right. So we'll do one more. Okay, which one are you going to do?
I'm going to go for The Four Seasons of Lucy McKenzie, which is a kid's book.
Okay.
Middle grade.
Yep.
Early sort of middle grade, maybe. So Lucy lives in Sydney, but she's sent to stay with her auntie, who lives in a big house in the countryside, basically, west of Sydney. And she discovers that the old house is full of mysteries. The living room is, like, covered on each wall with these huge mural paintings, like, of the surrounding bush. Mm-hmm. Like, it's basically this big house in the middle of the bush, right? And in the middle of the night, she hears these noises, and she discovers that she can actually walk into the paintings.
Oh, cool.
And ends up in the same valley, but, like, 100 years ago or something.
Okay.
So she meets these kids who live there, and there's, like, fires and floods and all sorts of adventures that they get up to. But so it's kind of like Narnia, like, you know, The Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe, but for Aussie kids.
Okay.
And she comes back and forth a few times and discovers who these kids are eventually. And, yeah, I just really loved it. I love the idea of walking into a painting.
That is cool.
And it has a real great description of the bush, and, like, it feels really quite realistic.
There is another Australian middle grade-ish book that would have come out when we were young, and I think it's called Playing Beady Bo.
Yes, yes.
Do you remember that? That's time travel too.
I don't remember anything about it. I just remember the name of it.
It's time travel. I'm sure I would have read it. And
she goes to Sydney when the first settlers are there. Is that right?
Something like that, yeah. The family are waiting for her that she ends up staying with, because they think she's like some chosen one sort of thing. Look, I haven't read it since I was about 12, but I remember thinking at the time, this was the most awesome book ever. Again, it's one of those, I think, Australianism things. I don't think anyone outside Australia probably ever read it.
Yeah.
Mm.
Anyway,
I've just changed the topic completely.
I think it was out in 2013. Okay. It's by Kirsty Murray.
Sounds good. Okay. I really like that one. All right, what am I going to do as my last one? All right, okay. The last one I'll mention is After Eden by Helen Douglas. There's two books, basically. So After Eden's book one, and then I think the second one's Chasing Eden or Chasing Stars, maybe it might be. But basically it's not the best written books ever, but for some reason I had a real soft spot for these books. I really like them. Something about them, I just thought they're really easy read, but there was something quite sweet about them. Very high schoolish though. Okay. So basically main character, Eden gets the hots for the new boy that just started at the school. That's a bit mysterious, Ryan. And he's also living just down the road from her. Mm-hmm. And she soon discovers that he is a traveller from the future who has come back because he needs to stop her best friend from making this sort of one in a billion random chance, you know, findings of this solar system or star. Because he's into astronomy.
Yeah.
Because that actually ends up causing a huge virus and plague, like, you know, on Earth. I can't remember exactly what it is, but they, like, go there and people live there and then it brings back and it's really bad.
Oh, okay, I see.
But, you know, it was a really great find for a long, long time. And
yeah.
It's just, I don't know, it's a very simplistic but very sweet time travel story. Yeah, romance. They fall in love, obviously, okay, and star-crossed lovers. And they can't really be together and she's not meant to know. All the normal, normal traditional trappings of a, you know, science fiction time travel. But I felt we needed one really traditional, traditional time travel. It's a really fast, simple read. I quite liked it. And the second book is set in the future. She goes into the future.
Oh, okay.
So cool. You get to see the now and the future versions.
Right, okay. Yep.
So that was good. Okay, all right. So look, just a couple of shout-outs, which I won't talk about, but a couple of other ones that I think are really worth mentioning are 57 Lives of Alex Wayfair, which was a really good one, and also the Hourglass series by Myra McIntyre, which I think actually has been optioned for movies.
Okay.
Whether or not it ever gets turned in, I think everything gets optioned these days. But
yeah,
that was great too, though I never got around to reading book three because I didn't get my hands on a copy. It was really good. Yeah.
My shout-outs are The River of No Return by B. Ridgway, which I really enjoyed.
Yeah,
it was great. Lots of very complicated time travel society type stuff, and Regency romance type things mixed in with that. It was really good, and the romance is good too. And the other romance time travel is A Discovery of Witches by Deborah Harkness, and the following, actually the first book doesn't actually have any time travel in it. Okay. I realized after I'd read my review for it. The second book is when they do the time traveling, which is called Shadow of Night, I think, and that's a really great sort of they travel back to Elizabethan London. Okay. And that's a great sort of evocative kind of description of that.
Mm.
The books themselves are kind of slow, but the romance is really good, and the main character, the main guy Matthew, is like this vampire who's really great.
So it's time travel, vampires,
witches, demons. It's got everything.
The thing is too, I bet you there are so many great time travel books that I've missed.
I know, feel like
everyone that I've seen, I reckon that's come up on NetGalley or something, I request. I just can't help it. It's like Time Travel and Parallel Worlds, which we'll do another episode on.
Yeah.
They're like my weaknesses. I can't help myself. I have to request those books. I just really do.
Yes. Mm. I'm like that with Doctor Who books. Anyway. All right. Well, I think the next episode, if we're going to read Ink and Bone, then maybe we better do Parallel Worlds or Alternative Reality.
Yes, okay, history. All right, we can do that.
Anyway, if you know of any time travel books that you think we should have mentioned,
or we should read,
please let us know.
Yep.
You can contact us at contact@teaandthetreetops.com, or you can tweet us at @teatreetops or at Oaken Bookcase.
You can also find a list of all the books and other things we've talked about in this episode, as well as all of our book reviews at the Tea in the Treetops blog, teaimatreetops.com. Thanks so much for listening.
And we'll see you again next time.
Hopefully in 2 weeks, not so long this time.
Yeah, we'll see what we can do. All right, see ya.
Bye.